This is Camping While Awesome. My name is Warren.
This is Lane.
This is Ali.
We're coming to you live and direct from Beeline Motor Club West Labs. And what was that?
Stop.
Oh, sorry about that.
This is not the West Labs.
Ali, how you doing?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Great, great. You brought us a little treat today.
I did.
Want to care to tell us the listeners and whatnot about it?
Yeah, the
other he brought night, a beautiful smile with him.
That's not, we don't talk about that out loud.
Much of a treat.
Yeah, I made some banana bread the other night. It's one of my favorite recipes. It's made by America's Test Kitchen.
Oh, I'm aware.
Yeah. It's their, I think they call it the ultimate banana bread recipe.
Hey, let me ask you about that. The America's Test Kitchen. Did the guy with the bow tie bail? I think he did.
You know, I think there's definitely some interesting stuff there because it went to Cook's Country.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's like another offshoot, a couple of other offshoots as well. Now I don't know where to go for my gear reviews because I mostly watch that show for gear reviews.
I think they're still pretty on it. I would trust whatever they're telling you.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. But now there's like one of them that doesn't have gear reviews. Like, anyway,
what are we talking about? What's gear reviews?
They'll say like, oh, this is the best nonstick pan to use.
Best coffee, gotcha. This is like, best coffee maker.
And this gotcha, is how we tested gotcha. It. And the nice thing is that they're super scientific about
like the best lubes and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
They spray like, you know.
Yeah.
But they still do that and you should still trust them.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
And I do.
Good.
I don't pay for the subscription though.
No. So you got a recipe. Good.
It's I think it is a cup and 3/4 flour with a teaspoon of baking soda.
I've heard of it.
And that's your dry ingredients. And then on the wet side is 2 eggs, a stick of melted butter, and some vanilla, and 3/4 cup of brown sugar.
So vanilla extract.
Right? I used two
scraped off the little guys.
Two sprigs of fresh vanilla beans, and then I made a little mixture out of the butter.
Is it a sprig of vanilla? Is that what they call it?
I don't know what they're called.
Maybe a bean.
Bean.
Oh, yeah.
Whole
yeah,
bean. Yeah. I used two whole beans.
Two beans.
two and, beans.
And a microphone.
Yeah.
And so, so it's the 2 eggs, a stick of melted butter with the vanilla bean in it, 3/4 cup of brown sugar, and then comes the difficult part. 4 bananas, cut them up in a big bowl.
Extra ripe is helpful.
Extra ripe. Cover them up in a big bowl. Cut them up and put them in a big bowl. Cover it tight. Then microwave it for 4 minutes. Take the bananas out.
I don't think I've ever microwaved anything for 4 minutes.
Take the bananas out and strain them.
What's the bananas Foster's?
I don't know.
Okay.
and then you take the strained bananas and you put it in the wet side of the mixture. You take the liquid, the water that came out of the banana, and you boil it down until it gets to about half a cup.
Caramelize it.
Exactly. And you get it down to about half a cup. Then you add that to the wet mixture. So now the wet mixture has got all of this goodness in it. It's incorporated the dry mixtures, flour and baking soda. Mix it together just barely enough. Put it in your
mixing stand, like a stand mixer?
No. Do it by hand. Otherwise, it'll get kind of gluttonous if you do too much mixing.
Glutinous.
And so you use your muffin tin or whatever, pour it in there. And I always do some spray oil or whatever on the pan.
Uh-huh.
And then you take...
What kind of pan are you using? Glass?
I use metal? Pyrex.
Pyrex, okay. Yeah,
glass. And then I take a 1/5 banana and I cut it kind of like in an oblong angle. And I line the edges to kind of build this like pretty like little strip of fresh banana on the sides of the little pan.
Yeah.
And then I sprinkle the top with fresh sugar and then I bake it
fresh.
Just like, yeah, definitely not.
The freshest sugar
crystals possible.
Yeah, yeah, like not used sugar.
No
longer. Regular sugar.
Exactly.
Granulated, white sugar.
Sugar. Mm-hmm. 350 degrees for about 50 to 60 minutes, and it comes out amazing.
Okay. All right, folks, that's a podcast.
So this is something you would bring camping, right?
Yeah, I would make it.
You're tired of it.
Make a couple of them and then bring them camping.
Yeah, because they last a while. They actually get better with age a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, not too much age, but you know.
No, you could store them in like wrapped up in aluminum foil on your counter for several days.
Yeah.
And
dude, I think a loaf is like better than a cake in almost every circumstance.
And then the best thing is you take these like thick slices and you toast them and put butter on them.
Oh, that sounds.
Well, yeah. Anytime you add butter,
that sounds gluttonous.
Yeah.
Not glutinous. when's the last time you guys just sat back and marveled at aluminum foil?
Oh, wow. I know how you tried to kill a bunch of birds with it.
What?
Something like that.
What are you talking about?
You left it out for birds to eat.
They loved it. They didn't kill them. They were treated to my.
I don't think I've ever sat back and marveled.
I do every single time
I use it. It's incredible.
Yeah, every time. Because I understand the complexity of what it takes to get aluminum that thin consistently.
And then it's like, it can withstand insane temperatures, but it's immediately cool. Like you can grab it right away. It's recyclable. It compacts really well. It's a marvel. Mm. It's a real marvel, you know? Mm. When that was invented, it was quite a hit. I mean, it still has not changed and it's still killing it. You know,
it's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff, man.
Reynolds, it's his rap. You know?
Yeah.
Like Reese's Pieces.
Although Alcoa is the leading aluminum manufacturer in North America.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm ready to buy that, but I know they do some heavy stuff.
Yeah, well.
Wheels and whatnot.
They do a lot more than wheels.
No, I know. But they do Alcoa. I think
they're the primary supplier of aluminum for Ford.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Think about the F-150 that's all aluminum.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. What if I drop a bunch of bricks from like 40 feet up? Is that bed going to hold up?
Depends on how thick.
Yeah, right. It might be punctured, dude.
Because I'm always dropping bricks out of the sky.
Yeah, I saw a test once.
You'll be fine in your Dodge.
Mm.
I saw a test once.
That reminds me. The new GMC Sierra electric truck is coming out.
Let's talk about that.
It's kind of amazing. I've been following it since they...
Have they opened deposits yet?
I've been a fan since before...
I started from the bottom and now I'm here. But they showed pictures of it and they had the cool feature is that the rear wall of the truck behind the second row, the seats fold down flat and then the wall folds down into the body or the cabin. So you have a complete open bed into the cabin, which is, you were saying the Avalanche has done that.
Yeah, the Avalanche did this first.
Okay, but... Avalanche is a pile of garbage overall.
Not really? Look, it was...
It was ugly.
Confession. Yes, I think plastics. Avalanche was not a pretty truck.
Yeah.
But my cousin John bought the Avalanche as soon as it came out. He got the North Face edition. It was rad. He bought the Avalanche as soon as it came out, and he had that thing, and he drove it. He put, I don't know, 150,000 miles on it or something, and I think... had the normal like GM. I think he did a transmission in it or something, but otherwise that truck was great. And we used it all the time with that fold down situation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think
I do remember our friend Marvin had one too forever.
Oh, okay.
I think that's why he liked it.
It's a pretty sweet option. I mean, the four door Tundras have a roll down rear window, which is a nice option for sure. But this is next level because having a pass through into whatever camper you have, if you're making a camping rig, is pretty
great.
Ideal.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen with any of these cab overs and stuff. I mean, a kid could crawl through the rear sliding window or whatever, but this kind of opens up a lot of options for the camping world. And it seems like if this catches on and then, you know, Ford's obviously making a competitive truck, the Lightning.
This is going to happen. I think you're getting a little bit ahead of yourself.
What do you mean?
Because the Avalanche has been around. It's just new to you.
No, I think that having the tunnel gone and being able to package the truck in a better way will increase these types of modifications. Look at the Rivian, like with that pass through.
Yeah.
I just think it offers itself to designs that are less conventional in an easier way.
So I thought I remembered the Santa Cruz having that too. And I'm looking at a picture, but it says development vehicle. That's a Hyundai Santa Cruz.
With the maybe it does. Yeah. Faster. That actually sounds familiar. Anyways, in closing.
And by the way, I did it in 1993 with a Sawzall and a Mitsubishi. So.
Oh, wow.
It was rad.
Well, anyways, right,
so nothing new.
I feel like there's going to be a market for a camper shell that is basically tailored for this use.
Does it even change the camper shell, though?
No, it doesn't change the camper shell per se, but you actually have the ability to make like the bed and all that decking system inside go all the way into the cabin. So you can make it a 2-seat truck and then have the bed start at the second row.
Yep.
And then in the back of the truck, it could be like a changing area or whatever. And that's where like the roof is high. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
The Avalanche even had it like in where the tonneau cover was in like 3 pieces.
That's right.
Yeah. And you could put it in different positions to like close out the back of the truck versus the top of the bed of the truck and stuff like that. So, but I don't know. It really depends on maybe comes down to the aesthetics because this stuff was all around for the Avalanche too.
Right.
There were like all these weird looking like pop-up campers and camper shells. But
the Avalanche had that weird stuff like C-pillar thing going on. Yeah, but
this has that same thing. It looks kind of similar.
No. It kind of does, a little less so.
It's but, got a yeah. little ridgeline-y kink. It doesn't have the actual like roll bar looking C-pillar. But yeah, I hear what you're saying. Anyways. Yeah. I just like these.
I definitely agree with you. And honestly, that was one of the biggest, coolest things that John and I liked about his Avalanche was the ability to open up the back. And we would use it for all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. You don't even want to know.
Yeah. Like,
you definitely like do not want
RC
to know.
Cars.
Yeah. And
talk about RC cars.
Talk about.
Anyhow, I'm just saying that this is one of those things that's popping up now. And it allows for some freedom of camping options.
So
and I approve.
Speaking of freedom for camping options, I was presented with an opportunity to place a deposit on a car or to take over somebody else's deposit.
Okay.
On a car that's going to be delivered relatively quickly, probably in the next 4-ish months. Mm-hmm. I was on the fence about getting it, and then I watched the video of the Ford Lightning versus the Hummer.
Oh, the Hummer?
Tow.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to take the reservation and get a Hummer.
Ew.
And then,
God, they're so,
so bad. They're so
have you seen
bad.
One in person?
Yeah, they're disgusting. They're, we saw it at SEMA that year.
Pretty like, bad. Horrible.
They're huge and ugly and everything, but they're also
they weigh like 10,000 pounds and have 1,000 horsepower.
Have 200 kilowatt hour battery pack, which is pretty incredible.
So what's the difference between
yeah, but it
that?
Needs it because it weighs fucking 10,000 pounds.
Yeah, I know. It's basically the gap cost per mile, basically gas mileage equivalent of a Hummer is 24 miles per gallon. So if you have a car that gets better than 24 miles per gallon, it's more efficient than the electric most, Hummer.
Yeah.
Well, what are they doing with the GMC Denali power plant? Is that a different battery pack and everything?
So I don't know. Oh, it's definitely a different battery pack.
It's funny they would do that to two completely separate truck chassis.
I think I don't know exactly what the component mix is between the two. I would assume that the Hummer and the GMC and the Chevrolet all have the same motors. I would assume the Hummer has different front and rear subframe because of the steering and all of that other stuff that it has. And then essentially your power output from the motor, assuming that you have a motor with a lot of headroom in it, your power output is a direct function of the battery size. So if the GMC, let's say, is 150 kilowatt hours, it's only going to be able to put out whatever the discharge rate of the battery chemistry is. So it will only put out if it's a 1C discharge rate, for example, and only put out 150 kilowatts of energy. And that it's kind of a bad way to calculate it, but generally it's linear to the size. So the power output is linear to the size of the battery pack. And so the Humvee has higher horsepower numbers, but it may have the same hardware, just a bigger battery pack.
Right. And I don't think the Denali can crab walk like the Hummer.
Yeah, and that's where the front and rear subframes are different because they have to accommodate different steering mechanisms.
Do you know the horsepower of the Hummer?
I think it's 1,000.
It's like 600 or something like
well,
that.
Well, the
torque is like over 1,000.
Denali is,
I think,
754.
I think the Hummer is 1,000.
Hummer is some, I don't know.
Okay.
That's what they were advertising. Huh. And it's like crazy fast for how big it is. It's just...
Well, it has 1,000 horsepower.
I know, but it weighs 10,000 pounds.
But it has 1,000 horsepower.
I know.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is gluttonous.
What does it cost?
The Hummer?
Yeah.
I think it's like 130 or something. I swear to God, I'm just going to get it, drive it around the block, and then be disgusted by it and sell it.
No, but... okay, so I was going to ask you that. What's the you saw a towing video, so that convinced you to buy
it? Just convinced me to like take advantage of being able to just buy it at MSRP and make
okay,
if not just
so you're saying even. Not to have as a vehicle.
No, I'm not gonna have it. It's 1,000 horsepower.
Experience it.
1,000 horsepower.
Okay, cool.
11,500.
I mean,
it will be a riot, I'll tell you that right now.
Or 11,
as just a novelty, you will. I think it'll be a fun experience.
Yeah, it'll be like a fun weekend.
For like one weekend, yeah.
Or maybe I'll put it on Turo and charge $700 a night.
That's actually
and then just like see how long that goes.
Just for
because even like the
Rivian only rent it out at night
or $700 a day, whatever.
Yeah. The Rivian's like super cool and it's actually well done as like a product.
Yeah,
but I'm not like pining to I've driven them twice and it's kind of like all right.
Cool. Been seeing more of the SUVs on the road now.
Yeah, they're around.
Seeing a few more common.
Yep.
Yeah, they're a little lackluster, and don't have enough detail or something about it. I like it. I don't not like it, but it's just, I don't know, something about it.
Well,
I think it's fine. That?
House noise.
They're very, like,
Ratatouille.
It's very simple, and it's, like, design.
Very.
Which is good.
I like it.
But there's something with the rear end.
I wouldn't say it's a beautiful thing. Well, the rear end is missing the bumper kick out.
Yeah.
I know. So there's no definition there.
It's like the entire, the roof line goes, the furthest point is the top of the roof, and then it edges its way.
It gets lower, yeah.
So it's the combination of that. They're trying to like claim more interior volume.
Right.
And then also it has that like really crazy approach angle for the rear end or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
The departure angle.
Yeah.
For off-roading. So the wheelbase is shorter on those things, on the SUVs. And
yeah, the whole car is shorter than the truck because it doesn't have to have that pass-through.
Interesting. Yeah. That's a strange thing for a company like that. You would think they would have just identical.
Yeah, build exactly the same. Yeah. And you would just have an SUV with way bigger interior space, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, right now they have...
And the truck doesn't feel too big either.
No, so it's like a good size.
It goes with the theme, though. Organizationally, there are multiple different battery programs where they should...
But that's not smart as a car company to do that.
Not smart at all. It's just a product of too many things going too fast and not enough kind of like experiential oversight. Like... And I'm saying all of this ignorantly from the outside looking in. I have no real idea, but basically they do treat these things at like different programs. And so as far as I understand it, they have like the Amazon platform, they have R1T, they have R1S, and they're also working on a new platform.
And nothing's sharing anything? Or I mean, sure, some
there's a bunch of underlying technology and stuff that's shared, but they don't act like one unified kind of platform.
Yeah,
apparently there are like three battery teams.
Oh yeah, and there should just like be one basically.
Exactly.
Wow, trippy.
Yeah.
But it's also just a product of being pushed to or forced to scale as fast as they have.
Yeah, I mean,
pretty impressive. I mean,
yeah, from everything I hear too, like it's amazing they build such a nice final product, really.
Like this thing, like knock on wood that this is their big recall, but what's happening with their recall right now, if really this is their first real recall, then it's huge, kudos.
Yeah, but who cares about that recall? It's so minor. It's
like, literally retorquing a bolt on the upper control arm.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And they're just going customer to customer to take care of it rather than have people come in.
Yeah, and they even had a setup where, like on a weekend.
Where are you going to go in?
Good point. Where do you go? Do they have dealers?
No. So what they do was they'll either come to you, and then the other thing was that they had set up like a, it was almost like a COVID clinic. So we had the head of service for Rivian at our company the other day, just came by for lunch. He said that they set it up like kind of like a COVID clinic where you just roll in, jack your suspension to its max ride height, crank the wheel to one side. They retorque the upper control arm, go to the other side, retorque it again, the other upper control arm, and then you're off. That's it.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's nice, easy. Easy peasy. Instead of these recalls where it's like, oh, you need a new,
there's
fuel filter so and there's many, none to like, get.
How many fuel rail recalls has there been in like since I've had cars? Like on every one of the Mercedes that I've ever had has had a fuel rail recall. Like they're.
Yeah, Volkswagen like, diesels had high pressure fuel pumps. BMW had high pressure fuel pumps. Yep. For all the 335s
and those
were
bad
that.
if they grenaded, they sent like particles into the fuel system and it basically fucked
really bad.
Exactly.
And then how about the Subaru thing that's going on right now?
Cylinder heads.
Where it's just they put too much gasket sealant.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few of those things. There was actually plastic shavings in the oil pans and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Toyota's throttle pedals, like it's not even like a manufacturer's recall. It's like it's a design like problem.
Oh, yeah. There's also one of the big, there's a big rig truck company that actually ships some trucks already. What's that company?
BYD?
Maybe. They ship Chinese? Like 75 trucks. No, they're on like... I don't know. Anyways, but they had a recall right away. They shipped like 75 trucks and everyone was recalled because the seatbelt basically was like the bolts they put in were too short and they were only on by like one thread or something. So, but you know, even that's like not that, I mean,
no, it's not like
not that big of a,
we had, I remember on Roadster when we shipped Tesla Roadster, the first recall and everybody was like freaked out. We're like, okay, it's company's over.
How many cars had actually shipped?
I think we'd shipped
four.
I think we'd shipped like 400 cars out of 1200 that we were going to ship total. Ended up being 2,500 shipped total. I think it was, but,
do you ever wish you had one?
Yeah, I wish I had my car, my company car from that time. I had, VP10, which is validation prototype number 10. It was like a Azuro Thies metallic, like light blue with a dove interior. It was, and we had gone through.
That'd have been such a cool one just to keep in the back of the warehouse.
We went through and made it into a press car and completely stripped the body down, repainted everything, had it hand painted in the studio, added all of the NVH. So got rid of all the crashiness that roadsters are known for. I put Olin's on it. Anyway,
I distracted you. Where were you? What were we talking about?
I have no idea what we were talking about.
We lost
what
it.
What were we talking about?
We lost it. Hummers, Roadsters, Teslas.
Recalls.
Recalls.
You were talking about Tesla Roadsters. Recall.
Yeah, the first Tesla recall was the Roadster brake calipers, and those were coming loose, and we ended up adding Nordlock washers behind the brake caliper bolts to keep them on.
Sick. And it worked.
It worked.
And Tesla's been perfect since then.
Yeah. Never had another like flaw.
Never had an issue.
It was rad.
It's awesome, dude. Still can't paint a car, but.
No.
You know what's so funny? I didn't even
notice. Apparently the new Berlin paint shop is putting out some really, really good paint jobs.
I heard other. Oh. Do you mean the paint shop where Berlin?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's true. Yeah, I heard Texas is not.
Oh yeah, no, they're not shipping. There's supposed to be a bunch of new paint colors coming out of Texas. They haven't gotten the basics working.
So, actually, this is unrelated to camping, but I was thinking, like, why doesn't Tesla diversify their paint colors between model lines? Because that seems like an easy way to differentiate, like where, you know, like you want a platform share and all that. That makes sense. But it doesn't make sense to me that like Model 3, Model Y, Model X are all offered in the same exact colors.
What? It's not like an obnoxious explanation. Numi, the paint shop at Numi, we recommissioned the paint shop at Numi from Toyota. That paint shop only had a limited number of paints that it could do. And it basically, it didn't have the sophistication to do the changeover that a modern paint shop does. And basically all we did was clean it up, recommission everything, and didn't want to completely build out a new paint shop, because to build a new paint shop, we would have had to re-permit everything. And it just would have been just like you couldn't have built, you can't build a, build a paint shop in California like that anywhere.
Yeah.
And so, so it was basically kind of stuck. So that was the best that could be done with all of those.
But why is it still happening today?
Because they haven't gotten the Texas or the Berlin paint shops up and running yet.
Okay.
The Texas factory just got finished and their priority was making
batteries. I'm on the road every day and I'm surrounded by Teslas and they're all white, the blue, black, the gray, the metallic red,
yeah,
and black. And that's it. And you're like, dude, can you guys just differentiate at all? And by the way, a Model Y looks like a Model X, looks like a Model, you know, like
everybody at Tesla, everybody wants more colors. And then they're coming. That's like one of the biggest benefits of the Texas and the Berlin factories.
And give your plaid should have like really special different colors. Like it should be, you know, like
Franz has been talking about doing like a paint to sample service from day one. Huh.
Come on, Franz, figure it out, dude.
Yeah, come on, Hans.
That's interesting because
I remember one time Elon said that every car coming off the line should be painted whatever color the customer wants. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you can't do that here at NUMMI. Like,
you had like a crazy robot that you basically just pressed, you know, typed in what color and it mixed it and sprayed.
Could you imagine? I mean, it would look just like the scope of the world now, where all these guys with their wrapped Teslas.
I saw a wrapped Model S early on, and it really caught my eye because I couldn't tell it was wrapped at first, and then when I got up close, I'm like, oh. But it proves your point. Like it was a really like a kind of a flat sky blue. It's been around town.
That's painted.
Oh yeah,
that's painted.
No,
there are two of them. There are two Teslas that were painted off the line. So
that thing's ugly as hell. So. Right?
Yeah, that's owned by like a tennis guy. I remember that was one of the first roadsters that were one of the first Model S's that was shipped.
I'm pretty sure it's a wrap, but it just caught my eye to the point where it was in the parking lot at Shopper's Corner, and I was like, whoa. And I'm like, I've never seen that color. And I got up close. I'm like, oh, it's a wrap, obviously. Yeah, yeah. But it was an old guy driving it. That's why it tripped me out.
Yeah. Mm. There's a sapphire blue one also.
There's a tennis guy.
There's a sapphire blue one that was painted on the line. Not on the line. The body was taken off the line. Painted in the paint shop, the custom paint shop, and then brought back onto the line to get assembled. Mm-hmm. But there was only, and Franz got one that was painted like that. There was a few people early Model S builds that were able to get their bodies taken off the line. They could either get them painted or they would paint them in the design studio and then put them back onto the line.
Well, since we're on the subject of Tesla, there was sightings of the Cybertruck at the...
Oh, I was going to bring that up on the DWA podcast. Oh,
we can. But the other thing that was interesting is they're
really good, like panel fit.
Delivering the semi trucks too here any minute. So
yeah,
that going for them. Uh-huh. We'll just see what happens. Cybertruck will be interesting for its adoption of camping.
The accessories.
Well, dude, that accessory company. What was the investment? It was crazy.
They took $400 million or something. They took some crazy money.
Yeah, it was something like $400 million. Yeah. The accessory company that's already like outrigging.
Like, they're the Cybertruck accessory.
They just put all their eggs in one ugly basket.
And they got tons of dough for it.
One super heavy metal basket that no kid will ever be able to pick up. And by kid, I mean market, and pick up, I mean sell or buy.
I know.
Yeah. So I guess we're talking about it now, but at the art center, there was a Franz, your boy Franz was on stage talking about it, and he was so awkward. It was the most awkward speech I've ever seen.
Really?
He's like, and people like, well, they ask us, will it ship? Will this be what it looks like? And yeah, this is what it's going to look like. And I'm like,
yeah, dude, I reserve judgment to talk about Franz or
it's
whatever.
It's bad, dude.
Until you see it in person.
Yeah. I can say Franz took a pretty disgusting design.
Who the hell's Franz?
The designer for, Tesla.
What about Hans?
Well, Heinrich Fischer did the first Model S.
So that's right.
Franz took a hideous design from Heinrich
Fisker. Let me guess, the front end was really ugly.
It was all really ugly. And made the best out of what Fisker left him. Mm-hmm. And then, and I think...
Are you talking about the Model S?
Yeah.
Oh. And he designed the Cybertruck?
I don't know who designed the Cybertruck.
I think the Etch-A-Sketch designed the Cybertruck.
But the...
That's not right. You can't. I want to see you draw a Cybertruck on the Exosketch. Is it
LexisNexis?
Exoset?
Exoset.
Yeah, exactly.
The Miata.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a podcast. Bye.
All right. Okay. See ya.